Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Alex Camarda, Senior Policy Advisor for Reinvent Albany, a nonprofit, nonpartisan, tax-exempt charitable organization that promotes open, accountable New York State government with an interest in government transparency and public participation. You can find out more at www.reinventalbany.org. Alex Camarda, welcome to the Capital Connection.
Thank you, and it's great to be here. We appreciate you having Reinvent Albany on the show.
Okay, what's the shape of transparency and open government in New York?
Well, I think right now things are really not good, and we've seen a worsening of the corruption risk in New York State really over the last two decades, if not longer. Over 30 officials in New York State have been ousted from office since 1999 as a result of ethical transgressions. That includes lawmakers, but also statewide elected officials. We've seen in recent years the state comptroller, former state comptroller Alan Hevesy, ousted from office. More recently, former Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. And so obviously there needs to be an ethical cleanup in Albany that's long overdue.
Well, you don't sound that angry. I mean, I'm angry about this, and I'm fascinated by the fact that while so many of our politicians go down, there doesn't seem to be any real reaction on the part of the voters. For example, a lot of people around Governor Cuomo are in real trouble. One of them, his closest third brother, is on the way to jail. Another one has pled guilty. And yet, he leads in all the polls. What do you make of that?
I think it's a situation where there's a lot of cynicism among the public. I mean, I think it's manifested itself as disengagement by the public. You know, New York State has some of the worst turnout when it comes to voting. And I think that's because of public cynicism as a result of many of these corruption convictions and ethical transgressions by lawmakers and elected officials. I do think people are angry. I think sometimes New Yorkers don't know how to channel that anger. But as we saw in recent elections, we're now seeing a surge of turnout. We saw that in the Ocasio-Crowley race primary.
Alex, what do you make of that race? Now, a lot of people are interpreting it as progressivism won out, but I'm not. I'm thinking that this was clearly a case of identity politics. There were more people who were like her than there were others who would ordinarily voted for Crowley. I don't think we could necessarily take recompense from that.
I think there were changing demographics in the district, but at the same time, there was a surge of turnout among young, I think, white voters in certain areas of the district, like Astoria and in Jackson Heights, that were not the background of Ocasio-Cortez. And I think that speaks to the anger that you spoke of in terms of people turning out and wanting to make their voice heard.
Well, we'll see. We do know that Ocasio-Cortez has become a superstar. Before she even takes office as a major backbencher in the Congress, she's already endorsing people. We'll see whether any of that holds.
We will, but I think it's quite a statement against business as usual and machine politics that Joe Crowley came to stand for as leader of the Democratic Party in Queens.
Okay, let's continue with our show here, the Capital Connection. The trials are continuing. Now, one of them is winding up, and that's the Buffalo Billions trial. The governor, the same governor we've been talking about, put a lot of money into Buffalo, and there have been accusations that it was pay to play. So let me start with that. Is it all pay to play in New York? You say there's a lot of cynicism. I'm cynical. You know, you want something from the governor, you put some money in. And if in fact the governor says, if you're not with me, you're against me, basically. It's awful, isn't it?
It is. And I think there's certainly a perception of legalized bribery, quid pro quos. Obviously, in the case of the Calheiros trial, he is on trial, as are the developers. of upstate development projects for actual bid rigging, which is a federal crime. But I think what you're seeing generally is we have sky-high contribution limits for donations to campaigns in New York. And when you have companies, whether it be Core Developments or LP Simonelli, both of which gave hundreds of thousands of dollars to the governor's campaign while bidding on contracts, even if there weren't corruption allegations, as there are in these cases, I think it creates an impression among the public that vendors and others who do business with the state, when they're making these large campaign contributions, which are permitted by law, that they are buying influence.
But do you
It creates the cynicism I spoke of earlier among the populace.
But Alex, do you think there's any doubt about it? Do you think there's any doubt that that's the way it really works, pay to play? And the Supreme Court itself has come along and said, you know, we got to show a very specific quid pro quo, which may be one of the reasons that Andrew Cuomo is not on trial himself.
Yes. I mean, what you're referencing is a case that the Supreme Court made a ruling on involving the former governor of Virginia, Bob McDonnell, and they narrowed the definition of corruption so that there's only a quid pro quo, according to the Supreme Court, when the elected official takes a formal action. So if the elected official merely refers a matter to an agency official or one of their subordinates or provides a political courtesy of some sort by setting up a meeting, that's not considered a quo for the quid of a gift or a campaign contribution.
Well,
but clearly, we think it ought to be broader, and we think there need to be systemic fixes. For example, lowering campaign contributions limits dramatically, closing the LLC loophole that is used by real estate developers and others to give contributions that are in excess of the already sky-high contribution limits. We need to put in place these systemic fixes that will instill greater confidence in our government.
So you got a bunch of people who, I'm sorry, I know I'll be criticized for this, but many of whom, not all, but many of whom are thugs and pigs. And why in the world, here you guys are going, you're spinning your wheels, you're on that bicycle, standing bicycle, we ain't going nowhere. What in the world makes you think that these people in the legislature will ruin the golden pig that they already have by the snout?
Well, certainly good government advocacy is very difficult. You know, often you're trying to convince lawmakers and elected officials to vote against their self-interests and the system that got them elected. And so they're often reluctant to change it. But I will say this, I mean, we advocated for a number of bills before the legislature this past session, one of which was the Comptroller's Procurement Integrity Act, a clean contracting bill that would have enabled the comptroller to review contracts before they're finalized, which we believe would have prevented the bid rigging that you're now seeing on trial. And many individual lawmakers supported that legislation. We have had over 70 assembly members sign on to that legislation or another piece of legislation that would reveal the economic development spending of the state and the jobs produced for that spending. And the leadership is really the problem. The Senate did pass both those bills, but Speaker Hastie and the Assembly did not. And we know that he actually supports the policies, but he didn't want to disturb his relationship with the governor. And that's really unacceptable to us because we feel he was putting his personal relationship above the public interest. And we certainly understand the desire to get a three-way agreement as he wanted to. But at some point, you have to do the right thing for the public and upset your personal relationships in some instances.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, but you know, it's such a fixed game in Albany. The speaker says, well, you know, I have to keep my lines of communication open with the governor. You describe it as personal. I don't think it's personal. These people elect that man, and if they didn't want him there, and if he was ticking them off, he wouldn't be there. But he is doing their bidding. I'm sorry, Alex, I don't think I agree with you on this one.
You're saying that you feel he's doing the bidding of the individual lawmakers?
As an aggregate, yes. That's exactly what I'm saying. And, you know, we have a saying in politics, you're either in the tank or you're off the hook. He lets a certain number of them off the hook. They let a certain number of them off the hook. They're allowed to go back to the constituents and say, well, I voted against it. come on, when they really mean it, they'll really do it. I have no taste for this at all. But let's go back to Calieros. The problem with the Calieros trial is that we know that Calieros hasn't gained anything materially himself other than to keep his job. And I think it's a weak thread with this governor. You know, do you think juries are in a mood to say, okay, if you didn't get anything, that we're going to find you guilty?
Certainly that's a harder case to prove, I think in part because of the Supreme Court decisions we referenced earlier.
Yes.
But at the same time, the emails are very damning in this case. It's very clear to me from the emails that Calieros shared the RFPs with both developers, LP Simonelli and Core Development, before they were issued, that they crafted the specs of the RFP to these companies, the most visible example being the 50 years of experience they initially required for the preferred developer contract.
They said that was a
mistake. LP Simonelli won.
Yeah, they said that was a mistake. It shouldn't have been 50 years. It should have been 15 years. That's pretty funny.
Right, and then they narrowed it to 15 years. But there's no doubt that there was information exchanged before the RFP was issued. And, you know, they obviously also tried to cover up these communications where they were deleting emails and made statements to the effect of, use Gmail, not email, as Calieros said in one communication with the developers. And on multiple occasions, they were, trying to hide the communications they were engaged in, because I believe they knew they were wrong.
Alex Camarda, I want to go back to something you referenced a little while earlier, and that was your support for this bill that would have given powers that were taken away mysteriously from the comptroller and give them back to him. Now, the comptroller had the power to pre-audit contracts. Cuomo and his minions in the legislature decided that they would take that away from him. What could have their possible explanation for that been?
Yeah, you know, it was done in the first budget following the governor coming to power. I don't think it received really any attention at the time. But obviously it set up this process whereby contracts could be issued through these nonprofit affiliates of SUNY Poly. Fort Schuyler was the entity, the nonprofit that issued the contracts in the Calieros case. And these nonprofits are very problematic because they're not subject to the open meetings law, freedom of information laws, or procurement laws that agencies typically follow.
Yeah, but Alex,
stop. And less regulation. And that, we believe that led directly to the bid rigging and removing the comptroller's authority to review contracts was now part of that process.
Now, we have a state constitution. We have a comptroller. You're absolutely right about everything you've just said. But, you know, this really is signs of piggery. The idea that not only the governor, I get him, believe me, I do, but the legislature would take one of their own. After all, that's where Tom DiNapoli came from, and who was then the comptroller of the state of New York, and rip those powers away from him and still not give them back. And we know, as you have indicated, that those guys who have been convicted or will be convicted of this knew full well what they were doing, and they were not caught because DiNapoli didn't have those powers anymore, and they won't give them back to him. That's disgusting.
Yeah, we think it's terribly wrong, and we think it set up a structure whereby there was lack of accountability and transparency and led directly to these bid rigging allegations and this trial. And the bill that the comptroller has put forth would ban the ability of nonprofits like Fort Schuyler from doing these types of economic development bidding. And frankly, it ought to be done by ESD. That's the proper agency for this, the state's economic development agency. And it should be subject to all of the guidelines and restrictions that an agency would face when it bids out contracts.
Well, you know, that's
and if it had been done so, none of this would have likely happened.
That's interesting that you say that, because now we have Cynthia Nixon, who's running against the governor, giving it an old school try, has called for reviving of the very Moreland Act Commission. that was established by this governor, which was supposed to root out corruption in government, which he promised during his campaign. And then he goes and he says, well, it's my commission. I could do anything I want with it. And he disbands the commission to the great unhappiness of many of the members of that Moreland Act Commission. And the word on the street was they were getting a little too close to the governor's people on all of this. So he disbands it. Nixon is now calling for the reviving of that. What do you make of her move?
Whatever it takes to get reform accomplished in New York, whether it's done through a Moreland Commission, look, many of these systemic fixes can be done by the legislature themselves. The solutions have been known for years, and it's just a matter of political will. You know, with respect to the governor, I mean, we think he's obviously been a great disappointment when it comes to good government reform. I mean, back in 2010, when he first ran for office, he stood in front of the Tweed Courthouse in downtown Manhattan and talked about fixing Albany. And he's really done very little in that regard. You know, there has been some transparency improvements with regard to lobbying disclosure and independent expenditures of campaign finance. But on the big issues, lowering campaign contributions, closing the LLC loophole, creating an ethics body that really works, fixing, you know, preventing vendors from engaging in pay-to-play and creating a New York City-style doing business restriction on campaign contributions. None of that has been done, and he's never really put his shoulder behind it in the way that he did for gay marriage. He never did a bus tour like he did when he wanted to raise the minimum wage. It doesn't seem like it's something he's really passionate about. And now with the conviction of Joe Prococo, his former senior aide, and Alan Calleras, who was the president of SUNY Poly, it seems like the corruption has touched his own administration. So not only is he not fixing it, but it seems to be infecting the way his administration does business.
If anything, you're too light on in your explanation. I want to go to the attorney general's race. Now, the governor is supporting Tish James from New York City. He will now have, if she's elected, an attorney general who will have to be the one who comes after him if he does anything wrong. You know, I know you don't like to get involved in partisan politics, but this seems to be a pretty difficult situation. You have Ms. Teachout running as one of the candidates. Wouldn't the state be better off with somebody who would call out the governor and not be politically beholden to him?
Well, you know, we don't take positions on candidates running for office, but we certainly support a lot of the anti-corruption initiatives that Zephyr Teachout has advocated for over the years. I'm less familiar with Tish James's stance on those issues. But I think generally speaking, you want to have candidates in office who come from different backgrounds, different walks of life. When you have people who are all kind of chummy and friendly in all the same offices, I think it makes it harder to have the independent oversight that you would expect from, for example, a comptroller or an attorney general. If everyone's all part of the same political party or all friendly with each other, that oversight becomes more challenging.
Also in that race is Sean Patrick Maloney. That's an interesting case because he is a congressman. I've had discussions with him on this. I'm not happy about it, but he's both running for Congress. He's already been gotten that line, and he's going to be running for attorney general. The newspapers don't like it. He thinks it's perfectly all right. What do you think?
I, to be candid, I haven't followed that that race too closely. I will tell you that as far as the attorney general goes, I mean, we're really focused on the policies, and we'd like to see the attorney general be given the authority to investigate violations of campaign finance law, which is something that's long been debated but only done at the consent of the governor in New York State. So that's one of the matters before the attorney general's office that we're focused on. Another one is the Charities Bureau. We'd like to see much more oversight of nonprofits. I mean, we talked about it earlier with Fort Schuyler. But there are also other, you know, for example, SUNY has hundreds of nonprofits. And there are many of these nonprofits, as I explained before, operate in a less transparent manner. And so we would really like to see greater oversight of nonprofits through the Charities Bureau, which is, you know, a very small entity within the AG's office and really doesn't have the adequate resources it needs to oversee the many nonprofits in New York State.
I must say I'm shocked that you say you know a group like yours isn't following the AG's race in terms of who's in it. I don't expect an endorsement from you, but I'm shocked that you're not looking at the idea that a guy could run in New York State for two political offices at the same time and then decide later which one he wants if he loses one or if he wins one.
Yeah, okay, you're referring to that matter. I wasn't sure exactly what you were referencing. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's something, obviously, that should not be allowed. A candidate should have to pick one office and run for that office. They shouldn't be able to shop for offices that they seek.
I want to ask you, Alex Camarda, another question, and that is, one of my favorite people in public office is District Attorney Soares, who often appears on WAMC. I know, he'll hate me for saying this, but I know that his office has been traditionally starved for resources. He's the guy who's supposed to be watching out for anything that's wrong in Albany, and they won't give him the money to do it from the legislature, surprise, surprise, because he would be coming after them. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a chronic problem. You know, during the legislative session, we advocated for the authority's budget office, for example, to receive more monies. It currently receives just $1.9 million to oversee hundreds of authorities across New York State, many of which engage in economic development spending that we also believe is not transparent or accountable as it should be. And the legislature would not, and the governor would not provide additional funding for that office, even while the governor chooses the director of that office. And, you know, we think that's unconscionable in the fact that this is an office that reviews individual authorities in different localities, looks at whether the boards are meeting their fiduciary duty in considering all of the economic development projects before them, makes sure they're responsive to the Freedom of Information Law, make sure they're voting on matters and properly disclosing any conflicts of interest and recusing themselves from those votes. And they just don't, you know, they have a staff of about 10, and they just really don't have the manpower to oversee all these different entities. And as we've seen with, for example, the Erie Water County Authority upstate, you know, there's a lot of issues that need to be scrutinized.
We're out of time. I'm sorry, Alex. Our guest has been Alex Camarda, Senior Policy Advisor for Reinvent Albany. To find out more, head to reinventalbany.org. Alex, thanks so much for joining us. We so appreciate your being here. Good luck on what you're doing, and you got to work harder.
Thank you for your time. We'll do our best.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.